Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 34, Episode 4 of Der Daily Zeitgeist for June 7th, 2018. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, and I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Over just a few miles, I'm on a gray. You're toxic, I'm sleeping under.
And then this other part will come through, but I'm just going to do the last part.
I'm addicted to you, don't you know that you're psychic?
Dun, 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 dun. Thank you to at Rock City Rach for that, a.k.a. You know, I'm just, you know, surprised. So I've been doing, like, you know, some iconic tunes. Did Raining Men, did some ABBA. Today we're doing Britney. You know, hit me with some, hit me with more a.k.a.s. I'm in the mood to sing, as usual.
All the club jams.
All the jams.
I like the fact that you always do me the favor of acting surprised when I do Potatoes O'Brien. You're like, oh, that's a good one.
Okay.
Never heard that. Yeah, never heard that one before.
That's cool. Is that the first time you said that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I just came up with that on the spot. So we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of the funniest stand-ups out there and one of the funniest writers and great podcast host. And she's a returning guest. She is Teresa Lee.
Hello, it's me, Teresa Lee. But why does she cry?
Ooh, yes.
Wow. Brittany.
Yeah, no. I got her. I'm there. I heard you.
But
how
like,
are
that
you?
That sounded like you... Are you a singer? Do you have singing in your background?
I have a twin sister who's a singer.
Oh,
I did choir growing up, but I'm very off tune. I can't...
Wait, really?
...hold a tune.
Wouldn't you feel like you're physiologically... You're identical, right?
We don't know. They never told us.
But I've mistaken your sister for you.
That's true. We look identical.
Out in the world.
Yeah, I don't know if our vocal cords are identical.
Right.
But our faces are pretty identical.
That's an odd thing to watch you two of you sing. One person just a markedly better singer than
the
other.
She's like trained. She went to Berklee School of Music.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, so yeah. She's honed those tunes.
She can't do a tight five at an open mic, though, can she?
Hey. I don't know. Don't let her try. Maybe she'll do it.
Right, even better.
Like, hey, like Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born, I was impressed. Okay? So, Teresa, we're going to ask you a bunch of questions. But before we get to that, we like to give our listeners a little precap of what we're going to be talking about. We've got some breaking news from
news.
Down under that we'll talk about when we get to it. We have a new theory on just who Scott Pruitt might be. There is more news on the mystery illness that is striking the eardrums of diplomats. Now in China, it is no longer just located in the Havana area, so it is spreading around the communist world. We'll talk about whether I still think that's mass hysteria or not. We're going to talk about why we're fucked when it comes to this North Korean summit and the resignation of Brian Colangelo. And we're going to talk about the movie that is taking the teens by storm, you guys. A little movie called The Kissing Booth. So, nice sound effects.
Yep.
All right.
Those are free.
Thanks for dropping that in.
And I did actually kiss Jack.
But first up, we like to ask our guest, of course, Teresa, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Well, it was just election day, and I was looking up how to get more information about political, I guess, lobby groups? I don't know. Because I get these mailers, and I got this mailer that seemed very vague. It said, like, leaders for equal rights. And then it was like, here's who we think you should vote for. But then it had vaguely, like, a sort of off-color rainbow flag. Like, the colors were all a little off. and then it had the Lambda symbol. So I was like, okay, this kind of, like, implies that it's LGBTQIA or something. But then I looked up the group, and I couldn't find any information. There was an address on it and an FPPC ID, but I looked that up. Couldn't find any information. So I think it was created just for a candidate to endorse themselves.
It could be a dark money group. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't think it was necessarily bad because I looked up all the candidates and I couldn't find anything terrible about them, but it definitely did seem like sketchy that I couldn't find anything about this supposed group endorsing all the candidates. It was called Leaders for Equal Rights. And when I searched that, it just kind of shows me a bunch of like general history about equal rights. I know about Equality California. That's like a big one.
Right.
This one just was so vague.
It
kind of sketched me out. And then I was like, oh no, like I don't like that they're trying to trick me.
Yeah. Well, you know, that the 501c4 is the tried and true way to just obscure where the money's coming from. And then by law, they don't have to disclose where those.
Yeah.
It's easy to have like these flowery names, like, you know. Californians for working families
just
or
whatever. Just look up the Koch brothers. All their foundations just have the most vague positive words just associated with them. And we now know that like patriotism is now a bad word. But
Like the Patriot Fund or something?
Yeah, the Patriot Act, Patriot Fund. It's going to be some manner of libertarian group. But yeah, if anybody knows what's going on with the Leaders for Equal Rights.
Yeah, that's what it's called. And when I Googled the address, it's in Burbank. Like, there's an address that has to be listed on it, but then I just got some local businesses. I think it was like a vacuum store or something. Mm-hmm. So it definitely didn't seem like it was a longstanding group that has been there. I think they changed their name for the purpose of this. But
yeah, no, it sounds totally on the up and up. A group you can't find anything
about. It also didn't say that it was for LGBT. That's what sketched me out.
Iconography.
And then it said vote for people who support us, but it didn't say
who we were.
I mean, I was like, well, what does Equality California do? And I went to their site. It very clearly says, like, we support politicians that support LGBTQIA rights. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, they're clear about their mission.
Right.
Yeah, that's why it's important for all people when you watch political ads or get mailers and stuff, always look, because they do have to say who's paying for it to at least do some due diligence there. Because, A, it may be a little bit hard to figure out where the money is coming from, but it'll also be clear if there's no website, there's no real, like, IRL sort of grassroots movement around it.
Yeah.
That, you know, well, the extreme opposite of that was, I don't know if you guys saw this in the pamphlet of information, but there's, I think it's Proposition 71. There's like no opposition except for one guy. It just said Gary Wesley. No. He had to say pros and cons, and under the con argument, it was just like Gary, and it had his Yahoo email. Didn't have any information. I guess it's just one guy was like, I'm just going to oppose this proposition.
And it's going to hurt my eye line.
Like, not a fan.
Fun. Yeah. That's a good way of making friends, maybe. Like, you're like, nobody's opposing this. Well, I will. Please email me.
Please email me. Gary at Yahoo.
I'm lonely.
All right, Zach Gang, we're giving you guys some real homework. We want to know what the deal is with this political action group or whatever it is.
Or Gary.
Yeah, or Gary.
Either one.
Yeah. Gary, shout Gary? Us out. All right, Teresa, what is something that you think is overrated?
Okay. I think that MoviePass is overrated because not because I don't think it works. I just haven't gotten it yet, and I'm tired of everybody I know having it, and I don't like signing up for things, so I haven't done it yet.
Oh my God, you don't have MoviePass yet?
I don't. I keep getting shamed for it, and I am sick of being shamed.
Oh, because like, is your friend group like going to so many movies now? Because it's like an app, like the payment isn't a barrier anymore, and they're like, oh, you're gonna pay regular.
People go to movies, and whenever I want to hang out with people, they want to see movies because they have MoviePass, which is fine. We live in LA. I'm supporting our business, but I just want to be able to live in the past and not be shamed for it.
Yeah. Payment is the opposite of the barrier. It's now gym logic, where you're like, I got to get as many uses of this because or else it's not worth it. Yeah.
What is it? Is it still a 10? How much is it right now? A month?
It's like 10.
Unsustainable amount of money.
Right.
They're trying to get you hooked.
Right.
Drug dealer style.
Oh, man. I mean, shit. Even if you go to like two a month, it already pays for itself.
Right.
That's
like one,
true.
I think.
One,
isn't like
I know.
Less than the cost of a ticket it now, is. I think.
Yeah. You know what? It's the anxiety of having something auto deduct from my account that I don't like. I just feel like I'm like, what if I lose all my money and then it's negative 10?
Do you have any of your bills on auto pay?
I do. And it gives me a lot of anxiety. But so I'm like, I'd rather just make the choice every time I see a movie. That I'm choosing.
Go full price.
Yes, I know. It's
in the
very
end, if you look
logic.
At all the money that could have been saved, you'll be like, yeah, maybe I'll.
I know, it's bad logic, but you know what? It's my logic.
Hey, you know what? March to your own beat. If everybody's on that movie pass, you don't have to be, you know?
I feel like more and more that is a financial model for businesses, is just getting people to subscribe to things and then forget they're subscribed to that
thing. Oh, 100%. Just, I still pay for like Office 365 update. Like Microsoft's always hitting me for $9. And part of me can't let go because I'm like, I may need Microsoft Word again.
Right.
And I do, even though like I could probably get a copy as part of like working. But yeah, I don't know. Some things I just can't let go of. And they got me.
Yeah. Well, it's just you make it so that you're getting paid for people's laziness. Nobody's going to unsubscribe. They looked at the magazine model and they were like, what if the whole economy was that?
Yeah. Like the old Columbia House model.
Right.
With like CDs and tapes.
Yeah. What is something that you think is underrated?
Oh, I've been obsessed with the whole Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande relationship.
What?
And,
wait, they're together?
I don't think people are talking about it enough.
No, clearly
I
not.
Saw like
I
a
no
thing
idea.
On Twitter. I thought it was a joke.
Oh, they got matching tattoos. Pete Davidson got a tattoo of Ariana Bunny Ears on his ear. behind his ear.
Oh, like behind his ear, yeah. One of those?
And they dressed up as Harry Potter characters and posted it on Instagram, and he posted it, and she commented, I think something like, let me slither in. And then she was like, ha ha ha, I'm going to delete my comment.
That's gross.
But it was like, she was like, but it's like really, well, it may have been something else. I got to find it. I think it was less gross than that, but it's definitely.
Oh, well, I like that.
But it was definitely kind of like flirty. And then she was like, I'm going to delete my account, ha ha. And I'm just like, oh, you guys are cute. I like you guys.
How old is Pete Davidson?
By those two rituals that they did, they're millennial married now. They dressed up as Harry Potter characters and got matching
and
tattoos.
Matching tattoos.
Matching
what
tattoos.
What did she say? Oh, she said, you trying to slither in.
Ooh.
Oh, so it was her.
He wrote, the Chamber of Secrets has been opened, and he wrote, she commented, you trying to slither in.
Oh, they're the same age. Get down.
Yeah. He's very young.
I know. I always think he's much older. I forget how young he is.
Yeah, he does look older than her. She also tries to look like she's 12, but...
That's true.
Yes, yes.
That is definitely...
And you'll only see the left side of her face.
I'm all for this relationship. I'm all for hot divas dating comedians because it opens the door for us comedians to date hot divas.
Divas, whoever.
Yeah, maybe so I'll be with maybe Celine one Dion. Day. Maybe one day, Ariana, when you move on from Pete, holler at me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There you go.
And Celine Dion, when you move on from
whoever. Celine. Get on a kayak to those children. I would get on a helicopter. Man, watch that. After Hurricane Katrina, she is so upset at the lack of response by the government for those people.
No, that is the iconic moment post-Katrina.
Is Celine Dion get on the kayak
on TV and talking about that. You clearly are paying more attention but if to you Celine look, you know, Dion than most people.
I wonder,
like, yeah, and remember that Katrina
remember that?
Moment?
Who could? Well, no, that's from my old coworker Rom, who always put me on to the latest Celine Dion news. Uh-huh.
Dope. And I'll go with Shania. Shania seems like a real,
real
catch. And
she's MAGA.
No, she just said, like, you know, she's Canadian and it would be fun.
Cool. Well, then after all that backlash, she was like, okay, my bad. You know, look, I'm just saying, like, it wasn't that I agreed. Look, I'm
right.
Still come to my concert that you all bought
at least for. I will give her credit.
Well, she has a lot of country fans, so she probably thought it was a strategic move. And then she was like, oh, I don't want to deal
just in a
with
bubble.
This.
Yeah, bubble of
all rich people
country fans
are out of touch.
She has also been the subject of a couple really good comedic bits, the Broad City one and I Heart Huckabees. So there you go. Finally, Teresa, what is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
Ooh. This is something that I recently celebrated. I didn't do anything, so I didn't really celebrate. But I passed the 3-year anniversary of moving to LA.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, right before I moved here, I had visited and thought about moving here because I lived in New York. Everybody said, I met with a mentor and he said, don't move here unless you have something concrete. Set up, build a bridge, make sure it's concrete. Because a lot of times people just move here and then just try to do stuff. But I think that's a myth. People keep saying you gotta move when you get something. But if you want to move, if you feel an intuition to move, you just do it. I mean, there's stuff to do here.
Yeah, whatever's meant to happen will happen to you.
Yeah, and there's tons of jobs here, especially if you're in entertainment. I think that's a big thing with comedians. They'll be like, oh, I really want to move to LA, but I'm gonna wait till I get hired on something before I move. It's like,
get my sitcom.
Yeah, people don't want to hire you if you live across the country.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of advice about LA is outdated.
It's
from the 90s and shit.
Or from movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you could just pull up in your convertible, look at all the palm trees with your sunglasses and be like, I'm here. And then...
I mean, I do that every day. That's me.
You don't have a sunroof or a convertible. But I think it's important just to follow your intuition. Like you say, if something is pulling you, it's probably for a reason, unless you're completely deluded about your situation. But because you could be the person, maybe you are meant to come and fall flat on your face for you to realize that the thing that maybe you wanted wasn't quite the thing you wanted. You can recalibrate your desires or whatever your goals. But then other people somehow can just pull it together seemingly out of nowhere. I don't know. You're shaking your head over there, Dad. What are you thinking?
No. I'm just thinking that I think that's good advice. You don't want to be one of those people who is middle-aged and being like, man, I could have been the world's greatest actor.
Yeah.
And you should come out and be disabused of that illusion if you want to.
Burst
or maybe
your bubble,
you will become the
ruin
greatest.
Ruin your dreams.
Yeah.
Well, also, a lot of people think it's always a one-way street. But the truth is, you can always go back. And I think there's just this fear of feeling like you failed because you went backwards.
Right.
But nothing's backwards. The fact that time is moving forwards means you're moving forward. So whatever you do tomorrow is moving forward.
Yeah. especially especially moving and like having that experience, like seeing a different part of the world is going to be, you know, there's going to be growth there.
I'm just trying to get all my friends to move to LA. So
yeah, exactly. Okay. Too.
Just say, come out. Don't worry. You don't need a job.
The water's warm.
Yeah. All right, guys. We have breaking international news that we want to get to. Brisbane, as I've been told you're supposed to pronounce it, has caught a serial criminal, Poo Jogger. And he has been outed as corporate high flyer Andrew Douglas McIntosh. Yeah. It's like one of those spy movies, or, you know, where the bad guy turns out to be, you know, the mayor. This guy was like a big time dude.
I guess,
in
he worked
Brisbane.
For like the retirement home company Aveo, or they do some kind of retirement village stuff. But what's great is that, like, people in this area, this Green Slopes apartment complex, they were just getting sick and tired of this. Clearly, somebody just taking a shit on the path. And
they were sick of his shit.
Yeah, the couple residents teamed up, you know, Harriet the Spy style, and like deployed all kinds of little technology. Like, at first they were using a night vision camera with motion sensors. It's like meant for like nature photography of like elusive nocturnal creatures to first kind of get some, you know, to build a timeline and get some blurry images to feel like, okay, we're starting to see when this is happening and the direction the person is moving. And then from there, just did some process of elimination. And then one of the dudes just was there with his camera waiting for the moment because he knew the spot and got his picture. And this photo of this man being caught in the act is, it's like what dreams are made of in terms of catching people poo-handed.
Yes.
It's really something. Also, if you zoom out, like the picture in the New York Post is a wide version and the poo is like watery. Yeah. It's like a pile of, it's not even like.
It's a puddle.
Yeah, it's not even like emoji poop. It's like,
oh yeah, like
it's
a
like
neat
soft,
little pile.
Wet poo.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Disgusting.
His facial expression too is kind of like, what of it?
I would recommend everybody look at the zoomed in version and just trust that Teresa has done the work for you in describing that, because the zoomed out version is ugly.
What was the quote that you said when the guy cut the picture?
Yeah, in the article it says, so the photographer goes, there's a red light which goes on before the camera's flash goes off, and he saw that and looked at me as the photograph was taken. Then he just said, hello.
Hello?
That's what he's staring at.
Is there somebody there?
Right. Yeah, like, me, and I'm taking a picture
like,
of you.
Literally, the cliche, caught with your pants down, needs to be retired, because this dude is just the most caught anyone's ever been. He's just looking over to the side.
What's with the poo jogging, though? You know
so
what
this
mean?
Is a thing that is happening. In the very early days of the Daily Zeitgeist, we reported a story from a Colorado neighborhood where a specific family was having somebody shit in their yard like every day.
Yeah.
And they finally, you know, got the person on camera, and it was a woman. I don't think they ever caught her, though. It was just a woman dressed in jogging gear.
Well, the jogging loosens the bowels, so.
It's true.
Right, because it's like when you look, because I just Googled poop while jogging, and the first article is like, why does running make you poop?
Yeah, no, because, I mean, it's a lot of bouncing up and down. The contents of your stomach are going to get, like, kind of pushed down, and especially
like
when you're new to it.
Making a milkshake, like, they're just jogging.
Yeah, or carrying a milkshake in a paper bag. Especially when you're first training for a marathon, they even have a name for it. It's called the trots. And
because there's countless articles from like running magazines or publications that are just like, yo, avoid the mid-run poops or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think this
maybe he's training?
The training for me.
That's still not okay. I don't care. I don't give a shit. You do not
do it on
a sidewalk.
Sure. But I guess there's two versions, right? Someone is just a sloppy, disgusting person with no regard for anyone else and is just pooping because they have to run. And like they're doing, like, you know, and they're just.
Because they have the runs.
They don't know what to do, but they always keep the toilet paper on them, clearly, as this man did. Or it's like a really evil person who is getting off on taking a shit. Like out there in the streets,
or sick, like, you know, they have like a weird kink that like made them like to poop where people can see it and like leave it there
for whatever reason?
I'm just trying to put him in a
bucket. Could there be a world where he's so embarrassed about pooping indoors that he has to go outdoors?
Oh.
Wow.
I actually like that, that he's like been shamed about defecating since he was a child or something. Yeah. Something like went off in his brain and he like feels bad about
poop.
It. Because we were talking, I think, in the office that we all know different people with really strange pooping rituals.
Yes.
Like I know somebody who has never pooped and not taking a shower immediately after, so obviously he always has
and
to
I know
poop
someone who has to keep the shower on while they poop.
And
I know someone who puts a towel over their lap as they poop. I know someone who gets butt naked.
Yeah, my brother used to take off all his clothes before
not even
pooped.
Jewelry.
Oh, wow.
Like, he would take his earrings out and, like,
that's,
anything.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Or he would take out his one dangle earring.
Uh-huh.
He'd wear a cross dangle earring.
Hanging on the hook behind the door.
Yeah.
I remember high school, though, because he used to do that, we stole his clothes. from underneath the, because he would put it over the stall.
How did you find that out?
I mean, because we just knew, because we were like, yo, why is your fucking school uniform draped over the fucking thing? He's like, yo, I gotta be naked.
Oh, you did it in public too?
Yeah, and you know, we're evil kids, so.
Yeah.
Sorry, bruh. I won't name your name.
And then there's also
It was Chad.
Yeah. Well, obviously it was Chad.
Like, do you think there's a group of these people who, like, it's like a community, like the way furries are, where they talk to each other, or do you think it's like a lone wolf kind of?
No, I think
go poop on your own.
I think there's definitely an r public pooping.
Oh, like a subreddit for
subreddit.
Yeah, maybe r trots.
And they share. You sort of share where the best poop places are.
Oh yeah, or like, what's your like? How do you do it? How do you get clean right after, real quick? I don't have a lot of time. I don't know.
Yeah. And now for my recurring segment, what would Andy Rooney say about this? And he'd be like, it's this damn on-demand culture. Everybody thinks that they can just do it wherever they want. All right.
Rest in power.
Rest in power, Andy Rooney, my man. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. And we just want to start off with a real loose theory we're developing. There's new news on the Scott Pruitt front.
Yes.
So we talked yesterday about all these bizarre expenditures. He bought a used mattress from
Trump Hotel.
We
don't know if he got one.
Yeah, was getting his
tracking one down.
Assistant, like someone who worked for him in a professional capacity, spending tax dollars on having somebody try and track down a used mattress from a Trump hotel.
Yep.
Spent over $1,000 on silver pens from a jewelry store.
Yep.
So like not even good pens.
Because he's not a broke boy using those G2 Pilots.
Yeah.
And, or Uniball Vision pen.
And also used his connections to try and get his wife a Chick-fil-A.
And don't forget his $43,000 phone booth, too, that's like spy-proof because he thinks, and not to mention, I mean, we can go on how he has to fly first class because he's afraid that the regular people will hold him accountable for his earth fucking.
Yeah.
So.
But then, so there's this
new. Wait, he tried to buy a Chick-fil-A, like a whole whole store?
Yeah, a franchise.
He wanted his wife
to become a franchisee of Chick-fil-A.
But he finessed it because he was like, I want to talk to y'all about a business opportunity with my wife. The opportunity is you're going to hook her up with a franchise.
Okay. And they never got very far. So there's a new detail that he had to be reprimanded by White House staff for overusing the mess hall.
Yeah.
This has just like kind of flipped things in a direction where I think Scott Pruitt might just secretly be George Costanza.
Right.
Like he's George Costanza working for the Yankees. Miles, you were saying that you think you know where
the mattress,
that mattress
is. Yo, the mattress is because he will probably put that shit under his desk so he can sleep because you know the man is, like we were saying, like when you're anti-government and working in government.
Right.
You basically go to work and don't do shit because you're like, well, I'm not going to fucking enforce shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the perfect thing. But when you realize sort of like what this restaurant is, it's like this isn't just like the cafeteria at the White House. Like it's a very specific like dining room that's only accessible to like a small group of White House officials. And it's ran by like members of the U.S. Navy and it's next to the Situation Room in the West Wing. And I think the appeal is that they serve like really high quality food, but very, very low prices just so people, if you're like, you know, you need like a good meal or maybe you just need to entertain someone quickly in the White House, you can just take them there rather than like leaving campus or whatever.
But it's a privilege that you don't want to abuse.
Yeah, it's a thing that they had to remind him. They're like, yes, it is not for daily use, my guy. And apparently he already racked up a $400 bill in 1 month, which to me doesn't seem
that seems
like
almost
that much.
It's probably worth
a lot
more,
but it's probably
though, right?
What,
that's
exactly.
That's a single lunch for me, bro.
I know. Mr. Foie gras and caviar.
But yeah, there's things he was over partaking in were beer braised brisket tacos, chocolate freedom, a molten lava cake crafted with imported French chocolate.
Are we still doing this dumb fucking don't use the F word?
Well, I like that they call it, but freedom, but then it's imported.
Chocolate freedom. You know what I mean? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, wait, what would it be normally?
I don't know, but I mean, like, what? Because I remember the freedom fries thing is what happened because, you know, France was like, don't unilaterally just invade a country. We're like, oh, well, fuck you. So we can call these fries freedom fries.
But at least the fries are made in they're made
the
in
US
America.
Of A.
But if they're specifically calling it chocolate freedom, but then importing the chocolate from France, that's kind of just
it's so stupid. Right. And it's like this leftover Bush era dumb nationalism thing.
It feels like a lot of this is that sort of, well, we can't have fancy pantsy food here, so beer braised brisket tacos.
That sounds bomb as fuck.
Yeah, that sounds
good. It sounds really good, but I feel like they like have to undercut everything with like beer, Miller Lite braised brisket tacos.
There's no like Brion Croute.
Right,
in there
exactly,
for people,
which I'm sure it was with Obama, you know?
Yeah.
Am I right? All right, guys, let's talk about diplomats in China.
Dipset!
So now we have two different places, maybe three, if you listen to our early reports on the Havana mystery illness that is striking down diplomats. Basically, the way this happens is they hear a strange sound, and then they start feeling like woozy in the following days, and their symptoms are like the symptoms of getting a concussion, except they're not physically concussed. So it's sort of my theory all along has been that it's mass hysteria just
aliens.
Because. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Totally undermine me, Nick. Thank you. I don't know. I just reading about a bunch of examples of mass hysteria in US history. A lot of times it's stuff that you would think couldn't be imagined by people, and
like the Beatles,
right? Exactly.
Are these victims all female? Because obviously they're hysterical.
Right. Yes, thank you. Good point. But no,
my first question.
First question.
Yeah.
Are they
what
ladies?
What were they wearing?
Right. So now this is starting to seem like the.
But these are people that are working in the consulate that were getting these pains or whatever. Because in Cuba, it was in a hotel, right?
It was all over the place. People thinking that it happened to them at their house and then in a hotel. And then it never happened, I don't think, in the consulate. I think it was always like at their home or something.
What are doctors saying?
Some doctors have said that they see brain trauma. Mm-hmm. And other doctors say that they don't really see anything. And that the symptoms that people are reporting are consistent with the symptoms of aging. Like, it's like my hearing is not as good, and my head hurts a little bit when I wake up.
It's like connecting the dots of things that aren't related and being like, this is all
And I forgot what
thing.
You call asshole paper. Toilet paper? Oh, yeah.
Keep that. Pooping in public.
But so, I don't know, super producer Nick Stump floated a theory that it is some sort of surveillance technology that, various communist governments have developed, and it has a side effect that is unintended, maybe.
They didn't go through a lot of testing with it, a lot of quality control with the technology. They're like, actually, although you can hear them, you're frying their brains.
Yeah. You can hear their thoughts. On the downside, they will hear an ear-splitting sound, and in 3 years, will no longer be able to hear. So, I don't know. It is interesting, and there is... So, one of the reasons I thought it was mass hysteria is if you look back in the 60s in a Moscow consulate, there was a similar outbreak of people thinking they heard a weird sound and that they were using microwaves to like fuck with them. And then I'm pretty sure they found that to be nothing and that microwaves cannot go through walls in the way that they were speculating they were going through walls. But
I like how some doctors are like, yeah, it could be brain trauma, and other doctors are like, shut the fuck up, you're getting old. basically, or like are less likely to believe that there's something darker happening.
And it seems to me that the doctors who have less on the line and are more independent from the government are the ones who are more likely to be like, yeah, this doesn't really seem like there's anything there.
So the ones who are like, there could be some fuckery or more, yeah. Right, to kind of push some kind of weird narrative. Like, look what's happening in our consulates.
Right. And, you know, this is in keeping with the Trump administration desire for everything to be conflict oriented and, you know, fuck Obama because he had good relations with
him. If you want to be told nothing is wrong with you when you're in pain, talk to my mother, who's also a doctor, for everything.
Right.
Who just said, you're whining. Don't take Tylenol. You don't need that. You're going to get hooked. I'm not. I'm hooked on Tylenol.
I also think because doctors have to, like, I feel like even if there is something going on, if there's not enough evidence, because they're very science-based, if there's not enough evidence to say that they're all linked, they won't say it.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But I feel like that happens
Scientists
with-
Scientists hate to speculate.
Well, that happened with, like, birth control. There were, like, there's certain birth control pills that were causing brain, like, clots and stuff. Because a friend of mine had that happen to her, and the doctor basically was like, well, we can't say it's linked to this because there's not enough evidence to say it's linked to it, but right. You're not the first person who's come in who's been on this birth control with these exact symptoms.
Right.
So maybe just stop taking it. But they can't, sometimes I think the,
right,
if
yeah.
the evidence is out there, they can't say.
Well, that's the thing about science is, you know, we like to prove things because we like to say, treat things as fact.
But we have to wait till after.
Like huge clinical trials.
Yeah, somebody dies or something or whatever.
So, I mean, one of the reasons I think it's bullshit is also because when you ask scientists who know how sound waves work, they're like, sound can't do what you're saying it did.
Right.
So, and one of the other reasons I think it's might be bullshit is that a lot of the things that they're saying that the sound beams are doing that are affecting their brains are like coming through walls, basically, because scientists have said that it would have to be like this enormous machine to create sound waves that would actually damage somebody's ear even. And they're in a room where there's nothing else besides them in the room. And, you know, they go and examine the room where they said these things are happening, and there's just physically nothing there. And, you know, it's basically been described as physically impossible by a lot of scientists. So
we'll see.
Maybe it's a it's all just a publicity stunt for the next X-Men movie.
Ooh. Yeah.
I think
almost viral marketing.
Definitely.
Yeah. Viral marketing. They're like, I subjected myself to brain damaging sound waves
now,
for the new Fox movie.
Now, speaking of commies, Miles, we have a sit down with the North Koreans coming up.
Those pinkos.
And there are some things that I'm starting to be worried about, besides the idea that President Trump will be attacked by sound.
Yeah, well, look, so this could potentially decide what the relations are between North Korea and America for, like, I don't know, a generation, let's say.
Uh-huh.
Let's put that as our baseline. Shinzo Abe, Japan's prime minister, he's in D.C. right now. He's at the White House talking to Trump about trade in North Korea. And, you know, when they both sat down and take some questions from the press, obviously, one of the big questions is, because Japan and South Korea also have a very vested interest in how these talks go, they were asking, hey, Mr. President, how is the preparation going for your big summit with Kim Jong-un that could, you know, potentially help bring peace to the Korean Peninsula? And this was his response when they asked him how prepared he was.
I think I'm very well prepared. I don't think I have to prepare very much. It's about attitude. It's about willingness to get things done. But I think I've been preparing for the summit for a long time, as has the other side. I think they've been preparing for a long time also. So this isn't a question of preparation. It's a question of whether or not people want it to happen. And we'll know that very quickly.
He's treating it like when you ask like athletes before going into a big game. They're just like, yeah, we work hard.
Right.
We've been practicing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to play a good game. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is
but
so
even
big.
Him, he's being arrogant. He's like, nah, I'm good.
Right.
I feel like I'm ready for this one. I'm very well prepared. I've been preparing my whole life for a moment like this.
It's an attitude.
Some people wait a lifetime for a moment like this.
Yeah, he's coming in with the idea, like it's a athlete being like, well, you just can't think about it too much.
Right.
It's like, no, that is not
it's
how
probably because it's
work.
Stressing him the fuck out to think about it.
Like, you should have like 100 different possibilities of how the conversation could go. You should prepare for this like it is a fucking...
This fucking guy said it's all about attitude. My guy, no, it is not about attitude, because we've heard about what your attitude is when you try to negotiate with people.
This is like, it's not like an improv scene. You can't just go in.
Right,
right.
It's all about intent.
First thought, best thought. Can I take a suggestion? Okay.
Okay, and like really come in on a 10. Right. You know, but it's really all about intent.
Yeah. First thought, best thought. Because we know what his first thought is. Because so back during, I think it was the Reagan administration, it might have been first George H.W. Bush, he really wanted to get named like to some high-level diplomatic part of the president's cabinet as, like, the main negotiator with Russia. And, you know, that was a really important position at the time because the Cold War was still going on, and they were like, bah, that's hilarious, man. So anyways, Trump saw the guy who got the job at a party later on, and the guy tells the story that Trump went up to him, and he was like, yeah, you know, I should have gotten that job, but, you know, asked him how it's going, and he's like, you know what I would have done? If I had gotten the job, I would have sat down across from them, looked them in the eye, and what was it?
Wait, wasn't it make sure they're real comfortable too?
Yeah, yeah. Sit down with them, make sure they're real comfortable chairs. Like the way the guy describes it, it's like definitely in Trump jazz. And then I would have said, fuck you, and walked out of the room.
So, hey, it's all about attitude.
Yeah.
Have an attitude of gratitude when you go in there, Mr. Trump.
That was
please.
His plan for solving the Cold War.
Well, you know, it's just really disheartening because this is a very complex issue, and we already know that there are already competing definitions of what denuclearization means in terms of what the U.S. wants, in terms of what North Korea wants. And when you add to that, you have a president who, I guess for whatever reason, feels so prepared, he doesn't have to look into anything, and pair that with the fact that John Bolton, who is the National Security Advisor, he has not even called one cabinet level meeting to prepare for this summit.
Oh, no.
So I'm not sure if like they really just are like, we got this, because in the past, I mean, Rudy Giuliani, I think this week was like, Kim Jong-un is on his hands and knees begging for this summit.
Mm-hmm.
If they really think that's the attitude and they're just going to go in and roll him over, which every expert is like, no, that's right. Not going to fucking happen. Or they already know they're going to go in there to just blow the fucking thing up and just act like, oh, well, we tried and now we have to take some kind of military action against it. Because we know John Bolton is not here for diplomacy.
Like, you mean they want to throw it just so they have an excuse.
Right. And just antagonize.
Fan the flames.
Right. Or they're going to be so rigid in their negotiating tactic, like, that we don't need to prepare because we're going to go in there and say, hand over all of your, you know, your nuclear weapons and begin dismantling your program, or we're the fuck out of here.
Right.
But there's been plenty of like back and forth with Pompeo. I mean, they have to be getting some kind of like information that it's not going to be this easy.
Right.
So that's just really a little disconcerting. Like, I don't understand why he thinks he doesn't have to prepare. Clearly John Bolton doesn't think they have to prepare if they just think there's just some kind of foregone conclusion.
He's treating it like when you get a group project in class and he's like the one guy who doesn't do anything and then just shows up on the last day.
On the presentation day.
But yeah, but then everybody's like, oh, we're not going to give you credit. And then he's like, well, then I'm destroying this whole thing.
Yeah. Then I'm going to say y'all cheated.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, the way that the people around the president treat the president is as a volatile toddler. Like, I was... Mm-hmm. reading an article yesterday that was about he and Hannity's relationship. And
was this in Volatile Toddler Magazine?
Yes, okay. Volatile Toddler Magazine, which I am reading now because my son just turned two. Mm-hmm. And they basically changed his media diet from being, you know, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News to just Fox News because he was making their lives miserable because he would start off every day hearing bad shit about himself. And the way they got him
by
to do that.
By hearing facts.
Yeah, by hearing facts. And so the way they got him to do that was by just repeatedly complimenting Fox News until saying that MSNBC couldn't be trusted until he started saying that and then being like, good idea, man. That's a really good idea. So they're like treating him, you know, it's very transparent. And so it doesn't really surprise me that he isn't being overly prepared by the people around him. I just don't know how they plan on puppeteering him through this meeting.
Right.
I guess, is Pompeo going to be there?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Pompeo has to be there.
Right. So maybe Pompeo will just do all the speaking and they'll find a way to make it so that doesn't
hurt
Trump's ego.
Pompeo really goes in and closes a deal and then they let Trump in after everything's been done. And he's like, okay, so we got it done? Like, just to be like, look, when you come in,
can I do the thing?
Just
fuck
say
you.
Yeah.
Fuck
you. Just say fuck you. He won't. Kim Jong Un won't be in there, but just come in the room and say fuck you.
Yeah.
And then we'll be good.
Yeah. Just get another Asian guy because he can't tell the difference.
Right. Exactly. They might actually do that. Be like, okay, great. And then meanwhile, like, the actual summit is happening.
He's talking to like a Korean pop star.
Right. He's like, fuck you. Also, your hair looks great. your swag is on 100.
And then just slightly related to the North Korea story, actually very related to the North Korea story, I think a lot of our hopes are riding on the possibility that Dennis Rodman is going to be involved in the negotiations in some way.
100%.
And apparently there has been some complications.
So there's a company called Potcoin, which is a cryptocurrency that is meant to help people in the cannabis industry. Basically, you know, like give them access to banking services that like a lot of federal laws, you know, forbid them from using, like most financial institutions.
Right.
So Potcoin is this cryptocurrency that is like basically going to be paying for Dennis Rodman's trip to Singapore, where he will act as peacemaker in chief. And, you know, he's been seen like wearing these shirts before, and he's clearly has a relationship with Potcoin. Around here, we've been thinking, I don't know if that might affect his entry into Singapore or whatever, because they are, you know, pretty strict with drugs. But at the end of the day, there's been a lot more writing about the possibility of Dennis Rodman going. And it's just really just funny to have to hear like high level people who have worked in like diplomacy just like talk about the situation. This is a quote from an Asia expert for the Center for National Interest. He says, if the administration has any inkling that Dennis Rodman is thinking of turning the Singapore summit into some sort of freak reality show, they need to privately reach out and ask him politely to ask him to take his talents elsewhere. The simple fact is that this summit could decide the fate of the U.S.-North Korea relations for a generation, and turning this meeting to some sort of publicity stunt would be a real shame.
But for Potcoin, I mean, come on.
Potcoin.
They need that.
Yeah.
They deserve it.
I mean, and then also I think some of his reps, when people ask like, oh, well, what is Dennis Rodman going there for? Like, is he going to be at the table? Like, clearly no. But they've described his reason for going as, quote, moral support to President Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Right.
So.
And so he's doing the celebrity thing where like they have their brand like plastered all over the place, right? Like he has Potcoin hats and like Potcoin jackets.
He's got a I mean, oh God, can you imagine if somehow he does
like gets in the pictures.
If he does, I don't know what I'm gonna do.
He gets Kim Jong-un to put on a Potcoin t-shirt like for the picture that like defines
like a prop joint. Be like,
right.
Yeah.
Well, they're kind of getting what they want, because even if he doesn't go, they're getting all this publicity now. And all these news articles debating it are mentioning Potcoin. So that, I mean, it's
100%.
Sort of like when ads know they don't want to pay for the Super Bowl and they get banned on purpose. I feel like it's like,
right.
Even if he doesn't, I mean, he's not going to be able to wear a t-shirt in the pictures, but the fact that we're even talking about it now, we're visualizing it, and they're
good
getting
viral
that
mark.
Yeah, and you're literally in the Washington Post.
Yeah,
right. And everybody has now. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of out of the crypto game. Super producer Anna Hosea, have you heard of Potcoin?
Yeah, that's only because I just like look at all the silly ones that come out, like Dogcoin and stuff like
and Christcoin.
So Dogcoin is because people is that for like black market dog trading.
Oh, no, it's because people love dogs.
Oh, okay. Just like
it's just branding the currency, guys. Dog adjacent.
Yeah, and I don't play the cryptocurrency markets. You buy in one Bitcoin and everyone thinks.
One Bitcoin.
One Bitcoin. Sure.
She is winking.
What's
like,
Christ
so hard
coin?
Right
is
Christ
it?
Coin is one that's like connected to your salvation.
Yeah, because God is all about making money.
Well, that's why it inspired many people to just come up with their cryptocurrency. I mean, I understand why there would need to be some kind of other way for people who are in the cannabis industry to have access to financial institutions. Cause
wait, this is so smart. Christ Coin is using faith, so it's sort of like, do you have faith in our cryptocurrency?
Yeah,
but it's like, put your faith in Christ, but also in the market value of our coin.
What, you don't think Jesus can make you rich?
Oh, wow, then this coin is not for you.
Yeah. If there's one thing my boy JC's about, it's getting that cheddar, bro. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back, and just an update to a story that we talked about last week, was it, when the Colangelo thing broke?
That was last week, I think, when we had the ladies of Night Call on.
Yeah, that's right. So for people who aren't up on this story, Brian Colangelo was the GM of the Philadelphia 76ers. He was associated by the Ringer to some burner accounts. They reached out to the 76ers for comment on whether Colangelo was associated with just one of the accounts. And the only people at the 76ers organization, according to the person they contacted, who knew about this request for comment was Colangelo and the person they called. And that night, all five accounts got shut down.
Oh, so, wow. That's weird.
Yeah. They were like,
And these were fake Twitter accounts that he was allegedly using to just sort of like trash
the guy who had the job before him, trash the coach, trash other players that like he, like the best player on the 76ers or second best, Joel Embiid.
And released info too, right? Wasn't he releasing like medical information?
And he also released confidential medical information and about defending a player they were trying to
defending
trade.
The size of his collars as well.
Most importantly, he was defending the size of his collar. I've seen it referred to as collar gate. That is the best tweet, was somebody was making fun of the size of his collars. They were like, this guy loves collars. And one of these burner accounts responded, that's a normal collar. Find another angle. Which is still just,
not him, not him at all.
So yesterday afternoon, I had a mild nervous breakdown because Miles pointed out a story on an NBC affiliate in Philadelphia that said that the Sixers, their finding was that Colangelo didn't know about the accounts.
They believe
somehow
him.
They believed him, and somehow, you know. So the story allegedly is that his wife was the one who was running these accounts that were just, you know, wildly criticizing.
Really?
All right.
He threw his wife under the bus?
That's one way to look at it. As somebody who
what do you
has...
mean, that's one way to look at it.
So I can totally see doing this for, like, my dad is a basketball coach. I have, like, been furious at media, like, before who are, like, criticizing him. I've wanted to do some of the things that these accounts did. I just wouldn't because I recognize how stupid it is.
Right.
But so I can kind of sympathize if it really was his wife. The details that make me skeptical that it was his wife are that the accounts were shut down the same night. So that means that Colangelo, upon finding out about these five burner accounts he didn't know about, immediately put it together that it was his wife or his son and then had her shut them down. The other detail that somebody pointed out is in the report, the law firm that did the analysis said they couldn't check the wife's phone because she had restored her iPhone to factory settings, and all of the posts from the most damaging account were posted from an Android. So a little Twitter sleuthing there done by the
Intrigue.
Internet. So anyways, I think what happened is they said they came to an agreement. They would say he was innocent and didn't know about the accounts, which is where that report came from yesterday. This morning, Colangelo resigned. So therefore, you know, the 76ers presumably don't have to pay him the rest of his contract, whereas they would have if they fired him.
Right.
And now his name is somewhat cleared, and he'll probably get another NBA GM job in a couple years once all this blows over.
Oh, well, good for him.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I'm it's good to see, you know, white men aren't having trouble landing on their feet.
Right.
Even when you're doing messy ass shit, like making fake ass Twitters and talking shit.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
He wrote a whole statement that just threw her under the bus. I'm looking at it right now.
He just released a statement?
It's a screenshot of a PDF from his iPhone. It says, okay. Well, I'm grateful that the independent investigation conducted by the 76ers has confirmed that I had no knowledge or involvement in the Twitter activity conducted by my wife. I vigorously dispute the allegation that my conduct was in any way reckless. At no point did I ever purposefully or directly share any sensitive non-public club-related information with her. She goes on, okay, her actions were a seriously misguided effort to publicly defend and support me. And while I recognize how inappropriate these actions were, she acted independently and without my knowledge or consent. Further, the conduct she shared was filled with inaccuracies or conjecture, which in no way represent my own views or opinions. While this was obviously a mistake, we are family and we will work through this together. But he basically just says, I'm not responsible, and also, like, how inappropriate it was of her.
Oh, man, my wife really fucked up, huh?
Doesn't even stand like, by her, like, I love my wife, and I, you know, whatever. It's just straight up, like,
he's like,
no idea. I didn't even tell her these secrets. Yeah. She just somehow snooped and found it. Man, ladies always be.
She's such a down-ass wife, you know? Yeah. She holding me down with the fake Twitter accounts. It's crazy to be like, and as the investigation concluded, clearly it was my wife.
Yeah.
Wow, where's her statement?
Yeah.
He ends it with, basketball has always been a core part of my life since childhood. I love the game and all those who play and coach it. Blah, blah, blah. I want to thank everyone. Mm-hmm. Who so,
I love the game and everyone who participates. And I love my wife, kinda.
Bitches be defending their husbands on Twitter.
I know. Just, you can't, you know, she's emotional, right? Yeah. We talked about hysteria earlier. That's clearly what was going on here.
But so you think, do you think she's ride or die or this is bust throw?
I don't think she even cares. She's probably like, oh, sure. What do you want
with
me
those
to
collars? So,
what do you want me to say? Oh, okay, sure. That I okay, whatever. Great, yeah. Thanks. Can you take out the trash?
Right. The collar thing is my one piece of evidence that suggests that it was not her.
For
because
sure.
No wife would be like, yeah, his collar looks good when he's
find
wearing
a new
like
angle.
Giant flare collars.
No, she
the
probably
'70s.
She probably was the troll that insulted the collars.
Right, that's more
she
likely.
She probably created.
She's like, oh, I had fake Twitters, like, but they were to flame him.
Yeah,
I have a friend.
Get him to change his outfit.
Was in a relationship. And he was sort of the breadwinner, and he and his girlfriend got pulled over, and she took the fall for the weed that was in the car. And I don't know. I think sometimes people are like, oh, well, I don't want to hurt his career, so I'll just take the blame for it.
Because the sentence is only 78% of what it is.
I'm not questioning her desire to do it. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it. Is she just... She was really incensed by all the negative stuff about her husband and was like, you know what? I'm going to clap back on my man's behalf. Or is she a victim of this man's fuckery?
I don't know, man. And we'll never know.
And we'll never know.
You'll never know. But, yeah, I could see it being a combination, some of the stuff.
What does she do? Is she, I mean, is she in sports?
Sure. I don't think so, no.
She is a Russian bot.
Her last name is Bottini.
Oh, there we go.
So maybe she puts this Italian bot.
Algorithm and blues. Are you going to check in with the teens, Jack?
Yeah, we should check in with the teens in our
love the teens.
Weekly Teen Watch.
Teen Watch.
Hey, fellow teens. So there's a blockbuster movie that a lot of people around here had never heard of starting last week, I guess. So it became a big thing on Netflix. It is a rom-com called The Kissing Booth.
Ooh.
And Netflix doesn't release their data, but when you look at Google Trends, that's usually a good indication. That usually lines up with how well the shows do based on how Netflix treats shows and treats movies. This is their biggest breakout hit since Bright, because there's no God.
But we knew that.
Yeah, we knew Bright was a huge hit. And this is their biggest hit since that. And it seems like it's just a really straightforward early 90s sexist teen comedy type thing.
That the kids are loving.
Why are they loving
it? Well, the plot is basically it centers around a teen girl and her male best friend.
Say no more, I'm hooked.
Right, exactly. It's her and her best friend and her best friend's older, hotter brother.
Whoa.
And then the main character, the teen girl, and the older brother of her best friend, they become a couple after making out at the titular kissing booth, which are there still fucking kissing booths?
Were there ever? I've never ever seen a kissing booth.
I think I saw one when I was 6 years old.
Is
but
it
was
like a peck?
It was like pecks on the cheek. People were not
children
making out.
Children or adults? Is there any sort of like, what are the rules here? It feels really creepy.
Yeah, I don't know how you have a kissing booth that does not come into some kind of weird
problematic
area.
Yeah, what if your parent
area?
Wants to support your little business, but like it would be weird if they got in line.
Well, look, clearly the writers of it are not concerned with the reality of how a kissing booth works and the legal mechanics of that. But yeah, so then through the course of like their relationship, you know, the whole thing is kind of centered around like she wants to hide from her best friend that she's with the older brother because her best friend is basically possessive. Like, not even, like, really in love with her.
He's not in love with her. He has another love interest.
Right.
But he, for some reason, wants to control who she's with, which is, like, weird and creepy, but it's just treated as, like, sort of a natural thing.
Yeah, because it's not even, like, a regular love triangle where it's like, oh, these two people are interested in this one person. and or, you know, or this one person interested in these other two. It's like there's this couple and then there's this friend who's just a possessive asshole.
It's a love rhombus.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Wouldn't he be excited if they actually, well, I guess they're not going to get married because they're in high school, but like, I don't know. I'd be like, oh, my best friend could be my actual sister. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, this isn't the, well, cause this is a weird universe that this takes place in. And like, yeah, the older brother who she's with, he's even like always trying to keep her away from other guys.
Right.
She's
well, like, other guys are constantly groping her. And instead of being like, wow, that guy's a creep, they say that she was asking for it because she was wearing a short skirt. Like that happens. The love interest, the older brother later apologizes to the girl's dad. Instead of her.
Because it's being fucking 1650?
Apparently. So I don't know. Is this like some weird like retrograde like backslide into early like dowry politics or something?
I don't know. I mean, I like how there's one line where one of the characters goes, "Hey, when did you get the boobs?
Hey, when did you get the boobs?"
Yeah, and then like the younger brother like is just like answers for her real quickly. It's like, mm-hmm. yo, what the?
He knows exactly
the body monitor and shit.
It was June 2nd.
Yeah, it's June 2nd.
I remember it because it was
the fall after summer from 8th grade. yeah, and but I guess it makes sense because it was written by a 15-year-old girl.
Right, so that actually puts a new perspective on it because it's like, yeah, guys that age are fucking awful, and like that's kind of what she knows at that point.
Well, and you're so existing like, in a patriarchy like that, and I don't know how many self-aware 15-year-olds, or I certainly wasn't, to then be like, oh, and then as you write something out, you don't realize how much of that shit is infused in your own creative output.
Totally.
Everything's kind of just fantasy. It's not creepy because I don't know if she's had sex yet, but a lot of people at that age haven't yet. So everything's
just
this fantasy version. Yeah, and it's not like a real like, oh, that person's being a creep.
Right.
But yeah, it was published on Wattpad at first and then later as a book. And now Homegirl, she's 22 now, she got a little book deal.
Well, oh, really?
For her. Yeah.
Oh, I thought she got, oh, now 22. Awesome. Yes, yeah. She has landed a major publishing deal.
Wow.
But the creepy overlay of the story also makes sense because after she wrote as a 15-year-old, it was adapted to the screen and directed by a, you guessed it, 68-year-old man.
Oh, no.
Hey, if there's one thing that director, I get this, man. I remember kissing booths in the 60s.
Right. Like,
I'm the perfect guy. When you look at that guy's IMDb, like, he directed a bunch of, like, other kids kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
Teen Beach Movie, An American Girl, Grace Stirs Up Success. So, you know, this guy, Vince Marcello, he's... I guess that's like his bag is doing like young teen girl stuff.
Yeah.
Also a weird look.
Did he also do the Rebecca Black video?
I don't know. I mean, this makes a case of why that movie Blockers. That's actually
Blockers was like I enjoyed though.
Like at least like a not shitty, overtly problematic film about this kind of era in a young person's life without getting into all the male gazey wacky shit.
The first one. Hey, look at that.
What?
It's the first movie genre that doesn't
Which
do
is
that.
Why it's so refreshing too when you watch it, and it's a female director, and then like someone who a director is not falling into the same pitfalls of like the just cliche shit that's in all these movies. Her Majesty, my girlfriend, saw the film, and she just hated it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, like on Sundays, we try and watch like one garbage fire of a movie, you know, weekly just to kind of like decompress. Like as soon as the movie started, I just fell asleep.
Liked it.
What?
Blockers.
No, not Blockers. I'm sorry.
We're talking about
Kissing Booth. Yes. Okay.
I saw Blockers twice in the theater. Okay.
Yeah, that was, I was going to say that was underrated.
That's how plugged into the zeitgeist. Yeah.
Don't pull my Blockers card.
Okay.
The hot teen films. He's always up on it.
And I'm always wearing my spinny top hat or whatever that thing is with the propeller on top.
Yep.
Skateboards into
the office
every day. She said like the next day she just went on a rant at work.
Yeah, it reminds me of like Suzanne Myers.
Stephanie
Meyer. You guys, I know Twilight so well. I know exactly what the author's name is. No, but yeah, it's got that sort of like, she, you know, it's this weird version of reality where it's like the man saves her, but also like sees her as an individual, but only her. Like, I don't, it's like,
yeah,
weird.
Right.
That's not how the world is.
This one is just a bunch of men fighting over control over this woman's body, I guess. I don't know.
Do they, like, in the description it says she loses her virginity. I just, like, imagine it also has to be through a kissing booth. Like,
behind a
virginity table. Booth.
Yeah, virginity. It just escalates. Just
behind a curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's called a glory hole.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Teresa, it's been a pleasure having you, as always.
Oh, thank you for having me. Is it over already? This is so fun.
Do you believe it? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, and I have a podcast called You Can Tell Me Anything, where I have comedians tell me something they've never told anybody. A lot of secrets, a lot of fun.
Ooh.
Had some of the Zeit Gang on.
Yeah.
I just had a Jackie Sneal on.
So. Oh my God, it's so dark, that episode. We're homeless, guys. No, this show's really good. No, everybody should listen to it.
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter, Larissa T.
Yay! Miles, how about you, man?
Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray.
Oh,
follow
okay.
me.
Cool.
On my journey
Sounds good.
To possibly getting 10,000 followers. Nowhere near there. But that's how we're... It's all about goal setting. You know what I mean?
You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. We are also on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're on Instagram at The Daily Zeitgeist. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we write out on. Miles, what's that going to be?
Oh, just, you know, some music, something to make you feel good, something to just play at home when you're just winding down with a glass of wine or whatever you like to get down with. This is River Tiber with a track called Barcelona, and it's off the album Indigo. It's just a good, man. Nice little vocal harmonies in there. The rhythm section is good. It's just, you know, it ticks a lot of boxes for me, as you can tell by my musical taste. So, check this out, Barcelona.
It gets the Jack O'Brien, hey, what is this? Seal of approval.
Hey, what are you listening over there, buddy?
Yep, that's what I say. That's how I sound. Hey, pal, what is this?
I think this dude's a cop.
No, it's really good. All right, we're going to ride out on that, and we will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.